Five. Okay. Probably should start this 10 minutes ago. Jonah and I have been chatting so far with some really good conversations around people, feedback. Obviously, the number of people that you have connected with over your 22-year career of running People's Zest, and just the conversations that you had, and our previous conversation when we first connected, so much vitality to the conversation. And I was just sharing that I was in a sort of training program yesterday called Strategic Coach, and the things that I was able to compartmentalize and learn about yesterday, I just felt like, oh, I wish I would have learned this so many years ago. So in our intro call, before we even got on this call, there's two things I don't want to forget about. The big change in your life about your perspective on work from 8 or 9 years ago, feedback for executives. So I'm just going to put those out there as commitments to chat about before we forget. And for everyone listening today, I'm here with Jonah Smith, the CEO, founder of People Zest. She has placed her Rolodex of people is like the, I don't know, the it's like the masters of the universe with respect to the people that you've had a chance to place over the course of your career. We were introduced by Jake Zachariah. Jake had mentioned that you were got a person we have to talk to with respect to getting to Hell Yes. And I think that's what's important for everyone to understand is that we take a look at getting to Hell Yes, it's a people problem in a lot of cases, and it's a case of capacity, capability. I mean, I like the get it, want it, have the capacity kind of thing. And the people that we bring to the table help enable the ability to get to Hell Yes, specifically on a scale basis. Everyone listening today, as always, please give us some questions. This is a lot. If you're listening to the live show, add some questions to the show. That's always exciting. I will very I predict that we will probably go a little bit off the beaten path a little bit today than our conventional conversation. I'm looking forward to that. As always, this is brought to you by IRCX, where IRCX is AI remote maintenance software, which allows you to prevent blind triage, blind dispatch, and blind spend on your maintenance side of things. Know before you go. And as we always kick things off, Jonah, a little bit about your background. How did you choose to start People Zest 22 years ago? And what's the problem you solve for the market?
So I started my career really with JPI, which was a luxury apartment developer, and we did national work. It was a great foundation, great leadership. They put a big emphasis on people and found myself at the corporate level, worked my way up very quickly. So I was there a total of 13 years. And when I started in leasing, left as a VP, had my hands in a lot of different departments, but the recruiting was where I felt that I made the biggest difference. And the partner that I worked under really gave me the authority to make good hiring decisions, but also to go a little bit on my gut. And sometimes that worked out, sometimes it didn't, but it taught me a lot about just human capital overall. And then I left People's Zest, and I was in a snowstorm in State College, Pennsylvania, in a hotel room by myself.
Go
I
go
had had
wild.
a bad day. I was drinking a beer in the corner, and I called my husband. And I said, I think I'm leaving. I'm going to start my own company. And that man said, are we going to have to sell the house? And I said, that's not going to be in the business plan. He said, whatever you want to do. I mean, who says that? And I was the money maker. I mean, who says that? Still with that man today.
There you
So.
go. It's like a Dolly Parton story. That's outstanding. I mean, and so you said you were you fed up with the situation you're in, or were you just frustrated, or what prompted that?
No,
That's a long, I mean, at the time, I mean, it may appear to be simple today to start a company, but to start a company 22 years ago was hard. To start a network company, like a people company, before LinkedIn was hard. To start a business in, I mean, and to be a woman entrepreneur founder at that era wasn't easy. And so those three things were kind of, we'll call them speed bumps in the road that you had to get over, or at least consider as you were leaving the safety of your current employment So why did you choose to make that leap?
That's a great question. And I'm just going to give the authentic answer.
I would expect nonetheless.
Yeah. So I had done really well in my career. But I found myself in a position that I was not good at what I was doing. So, you know, you move up in an organization so many times because the job you've done before was so good. So you move to the next level, the next salary range, the next title, and you find yourself doing these jobs that all of a sudden I wasn't good at. So, you know, I was used to kind of being the star, elevating. I had always been successful. And really, I found myself not being. I think the people around me also felt that way, but there was still so much value that I was giving. Mm-hmm. That other peers were starting to outperform me. And it's because that what we were doing or what I was being asked to do is not what I was good at. Mm-hmm. It, you know, when you go deeper into an organization and move up, you become more of a visionary, more strategic minded. And at that time, I was still in my early 30s.
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't my skill set. My skill set was somebody giving me that and me going, I can get that done. And I can get it done better than what you can imagine. And yeah, we're going to have a great time doing it. And I'm going to, you know, just dive in and build something that's really beautiful. But that's not what they were asking me to do at that point. They were asking me to create it. That wasn't what I was good at.
You know, I've used this expression before. It's this, you know, a dolphin will always lose a tree climbing competition.
Yeah. And I was losing it.
It's kind of clumsy, right? But it's fit. I mean, it's just not what you're tuned for.
No. And JPI was going through a change. We had laid off a bunch of people. I was still surviving, but it was evident that I did not need to be one of the ones that was still staying. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of had the aha moment of, what am I passionate about? What am I good at? And that was career development. It was putting somebody on a track to be what they wanted it to be and really being a safe place, confidential place. And working with JPI for so long, what had happened is I'd given so many people a job and was trustworthy and had a real relationship, not a fake relationship, a real one. And those people had left. And so I called them up and said, hey, this is what I'm doing. And they were like, oh my gosh, you gave me a chance. And yeah, let me see what I can throw your way. And it just kind of all, my first customers were people that were at JPI at some point and still today.
You know, what's remarkable is that like what you're talking about, people are doing, like are actively seeking to solve today in modern HR, modern human capital management. You did this, like you stumbled upon this personally. I'm giving credit where it's due, and that degree of self-awareness was kind of not really common or consistent back then. What prompted you to be so introspective?
Oh gosh, I don't, you know, I think that I had, you know, I grew up with parents that always were grounded, you know, so I had my feet on the ground. And I think that when you do work for an organization for like 13 years, And especially in that property management area, it was very female driven. Mm-hmm. And I know this sounds crazy, but you all kind of start to act alike, talk alike, use the same wording, dress alike. You all kind of have the same goals. And I was losing myself. I was wow. losing that being of who I was. And I don't think I knew it at the time. Now I do. Mm-hmm. And that's just it. I mean, now I can see that I was lost. And I was a fighter. And when you're fighting, you go to your natural tendencies. Mm-hmm. And my natural tendencies was that relationship, human connection.
Yeah.
And that's where I was comfortable.
But you remember, like, that was kind of like chins up era, right? Just chins up and just deal with that discomfort and work through it and be grateful yes. that you've got a chance to work somewhere. So like, I'm acknowledging the fact that you actually like recognize that chins up wasn't going to make you a happy person or make you as effective or make you as professionally successful as you are today.
Yeah. I think it's just, you know, I'm telling you, women have that extra fight in them. You know, it's kind of really? Like, you know, a mama bear is going to protect her cubs.
Naturally. Well,
you know, I think that just being a natural fighter and just putting one foot in front of the other. I mean, did I really know what I was doing? Heavens no. Yeah. I mean, I moved the stuff out of my dining room and called up one of my best friends and said, I can't pay for daycare this summer. Can you take my kids? I mean, it was just, I was going to figure it out.
Oh my God. I'm just inspired. I love it. I mean, I think that the grit that you presented back then and there, and just the determination to do something different, that's remarkable. And so tell me, like, so you've left your role. Like, let's go back 22 years ago. And what was your first sale like? Especially in a matchmaking, but in a broker or matchmaking role, you've got to make two sales, or at least, you know. And you've got to get a job to fill. Did you know how to price it? Did you know what to bill for?
No,
how
did you? I did not know a living thing. No.
Who was the amateur then?
I mean, I'd love to say that I had like this formal, you know, master's degree from SMU, you know, that taught me how to write something, you know, a business plan and then follow it. And no, I knew nothing. I would left a 3-figure salary and I just.
You had conviction around the yourself.
Yeah. I mean, failure wasn't an option.
I love it.
And you know, and the thing is I have to go back to the people that I worked with at JPI. The company as a whole was so supportive. People that I, you know, had placed there that were other places were so gracious and really supported me. Now, I mean, I did the work and I worked hard. And it, you know, it started getting the bills paid. And then, and you know, I was solo for a long time because then I couldn't give up any control or let, you know, the trust piece was so hard because we carry such confidential information. I mean, we hear the raw stuff. If you're good at it.
In human capital. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you're good at it, you hear the raw. And giving up that to somebody else to partner with me and start filling positions and talk to clients. I mean, that was a huge risk. And I did that 5 or 6 years ago. And that was a big move also.
So you've built a brand around this. where people are willing to recommend you, like Jake, to this conversation. Mm-hmm. How did you start building out that brand? Like, what was it intentional? Did it reveal itself? Did people tell you what the brand was? Like, how did you get to this momentum that you have today?
So I'm going to have to tell you, I have never changed the platform that I work off of. Okay. I've never changed that, because that platform I was committed to, believed in, and found it true. Mm-hmm. And I have, and not changing that in growth has really, I think it's made me successful. Could I be flashier? Could I be out there more? Could I be seen at conferences more? Could I do all the things better or more visible? Yes, I could. But it still wouldn't stay. Bigger is not going to be better for me.
Yep.
Being intentional and managing those relationships and being true to those. And even when I find myself in really awkward positions, you know, I'll work with an owner of a development company, and, you know, I'm his sounding board and his trusted partner in working on recruiting and how his organization is structured with people. And then one of the players that he is working around, you know, for the growth of his organization happens to pop in my inbox and is considering, you know, putting themselves out there in the next 6 to 12 months as a passive candidate.
Yeah.
And I've got to keep both of those confidential.
Naturally.
And be able to go to bed at night, making sure that I'm still staying true to my values.
Because either of those might not reveal, they might not actually come true. Like, they're giving you a forecast of what might happen. That's mm-hmm. confidential. You got confidential on the supply side, confidential on the demand side, and neither one might actually not come true. And so they might not, exactly. might not realize themselves, but the role might not emerge, or the candidate may not become available.
Yeah. And then I can also hear from both sides, maybe some things that I could suggest. Mm-hmm. That might make it all okay for everyone. I mean, the owners still get the growth that they need, people in the right place. And then the person who's passively looking, maybe it is time to let them go. Maybe yeah. Maybe if you're this owner's really wanting to grow, maybe it's time this person went on, because they're all seeing it the same way they've been seeing it for 5 to 10 years. I mean, change is good. You got to embrace it.
You know, I was really left our first conversation thinking with some thoughts around like the whole role of human capital in recruiting. And I think that what's interesting is that specifically the roles that you recruit for is that it's not a job description anymore. It's a problem statement. And so when we talk about getting to hell yes and the problems that you solve for, there's like a vision or an objective or a goal. There's the resources that are required to achieve that goal and maybe the obstacles that are in the way. And then there's the choices that you have, the strategies you have to overcome optimizing the resources or overcoming those obstacles. And like, and then you execute and measure the results. And the primary go-to to solve problems overcome objectives, objections, obstacles is people. And so like when we think about the jobs to be done conversation, like when we go to market, we typically, I will always seek to understand how many open job postings do you have? Principally because I know that that is how they've articulated a budget to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I look at the world in very simple terms. You can solve the problem with hired people, outsourced people, or you can use technology and process. And, you know, not every single one is the right answer every single time, but you got to figure out which one is the right answer for your particular objective. And so what I'm getting at is that, do you often get job descriptions that are, that you say to them, like you get a job description and it looks very generic, like you kind of know this is not going to work for them. Like, I know that you've given me this job description here, but is this really what you want? Is this really what you're looking for? Do you find yourself coaching the those that are seeking to hire somebody, like the employers?
Absolutely.
Like, yes. I've got a guess. How often are their job descriptions going to miss the mark?
I'd say 90% of the time.
That's my number. Like, unable to articulate the way they want to solve the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the job descriptions today are really, they're necessary for HR, 100%. And they're a great guideline. But it's not, the way that we're doing recruiting now, and it's going to evolve. I mean, our industry has evolved. It has sophisticated itself. It's so exciting to see, but you know, your marketing roles have changed, your L&D roles have changed, your regional managers are the hardest position out there.
Yep.
I mean, it's unbelievable what that role has to do, but we're really, and recruiting, it needs to change. And I feel like that it is changing. But I don't know that people really realize it's interesting, because you can ask almost any upper level C-suite person in a company, and you ask them, you know, what sets your company apart?
Sure.
Okay. And what are they going to say?
Our culture.
People. Okay, that is not that, but they're still doing things the same way. So, you know, they're getting.
They say that because it's the right answer to say.
Yeah, I mean, they get an open position, let's say in the hardest position out there, the regional manager position. And here, you know, your COO is saying, okay, well, y'all need to fill that regional manager position. But they're not really involved, right? They don't need to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
Well, somebody is going, and that's the most important thing, is your people, right? The people and the culture. But it's not a fire, because everybody else around them are going to do the vacant position's job, right?
Yeah.
So that position keeps, you get on LinkedIn and you hear about the ghosting, that you went through 6 interviews, that it was 8 weeks later, and they get an email or they never hear back from the company. And that's how we're treating our number one asset, our people. So it makes no sense.
Are you being facetious? Like, is it, are you challenging those that say our people are our culture to start walking around?
If it is, then why are you treating people that way?
Yeah.
And then what happens is that the position, so you burn out all your people that are doing that vacant position. You burn them out.
Yep.
They are now becoming passive candidates. So what they do is they get desperate, and they have a pile of resumes on their desk or where, you know, whatever, in their inbox and the HR portal. And they've got 180 resumes. Well, who has time to do that?
Yeah.
So what they do is they pick up the phone and they phone a friend.
Yeah.
A friend they've worked with before, and says, come over here. Well, the thing is that you haven't looked at your open position. What does your team look like? I mean, what skill set or specialty are you missing? I mean, let's be strategic about this. Let's hire the right person.
But do you find, skill set. So I'm totally like, here's the thing that I find frustrating about human capital. Everything you're saying is exactly true. It is the truth of the earth. Sky is blue, winter, you know, water's, et cetera. Water's wet. But it is, does not emerge as a priority approach to solving things.
Definitely not, because they always have somebody else. They have those people that were like a me. They have some superstars that have grit, that are going to get it done. They're the getter doneers, and they cover, and then they get burnt out, or they don't. Yeah. Or you hear the number one thing that you hear today of passive candidates is they need a work-life balance.
Yeah.
That's the number one thing.
Which is a really difficult in this business because of the 24/7 nature of the demand side of things, right? Like ultimately, like we'll talk maintenance specifically, right? We staff it for one quarter of the demand. You got 40 hours a week and there's 170 hours that someone's sitting inside an apartment, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're already down like 25% from a ability to respond. So the conventional approach in the maintenance side of things, and I would say leasing as well, is that it's we're designing it to fail. Like it's designed, I love to look at the world, very simple mind in my brain, is that there's demand and then there's supply. And if you think of leasing requests, you've got your job is to sell it, to lease an apartment. Well, look at the demand side of your market and how they operate. They operate 24/7. Okay. So that means you need to be able to respond 24/7. But if you don't have that, then you're limiting the people that are just able to respond when you're available to respond. And this doesn't work anymore. And so consequently we put artificial objectives on people to be able to hit targets that are designed to be a mismatch between the demand, the availability of demand and the ability to respond on a supply side from just being able to answer the phone. And so like this move to centralization, you know, we talk a lot about it from a an operational excellence perspective, but I think that in the long run or even in the medium term, there's going to be a recognition that we're just matching the demand, the timelines of the demand with the timelines of the supply. And so which will decrease burnout. Will decrease work-life balance because it's naturally a mismatch.
You know, I've seen our industry that goes in cycles, just like everything does, the real estate cycle even, and home sale cycle. But we've gone through a cycle in my time of centralizing resources. So you centralize, and then 10 years from now, we're going to decentralize again. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to re-centralize again. It just comes in cycles. I mean, it makes sense, but at the end of the day, you know, somebody said something to me the other day, something had happened and they said, Jonna, it's not personal. You know, people will say things like that. And I'm thinking, well, we're all people. So to some degree, it is personal.
Yeah.
I mean, it is personal. And, and you can walk down the street and see five people wearing a Be Kind sweatshirt. So is it fair to say, well, if it's business, though, it's not personal. I may have just chewed you out in a way that was not appropriate for work, but it's not personal.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, this is where you and I will just turn 90 minutes. But, you know, like I'm not great at, well, I'm getting better. I'm not great at giving feedback. And we talked about this earlier. I'm working on it. And I think to some degree, I'm great at cheerleading. No, I'm good at cheerleading. I'm not great at giving constructive feedback. And I'm getting better at it because I will often hope that the feedback solves itself, like the problem will solve itself. But it rarely does. And so
Yeah, it rarely is.
I'm getting better at giving feedback quicker. And so the quality probably isn't there yet. I'm certain that the tact is not there, but I know that I'm getting better at the timeliness. Mm-hmm. And so eventually I've got to get better at the quality, and then I got to get better at the tact. The tact part, that's some work. I think that's part of having teenagers. I just have a very quick fuse, and and I got to separate that from work. But I do need to figure that out. So when we were talking about feedback earlier, mm-hmm. for leaders and executives. So how do you find that feedback cycles back with people?
I think our industry as a whole is not good at giving feedback. I don't think it's because they don't want to. I think it's because they don't have time. Yeah. Or it's uncomfortable. So I'm not going to say I hit it 100%, but I get pretty close that if I have somebody that is interviewing for a role, and at the end of that time, I'll be honest with them and say, you know, these are the things that you've done really well at, but these mm-hmm. are the things that I'm missing for this role. And so I'm not sure that you'll go on to the next step, meaning that I'm not sure I'm going to present you to my client. Yeah. But here is why. Because if you don't tell them, then they're going to think I didn't do well in my interview.
Yeah.
Well, if you didn't do well in your interview, I'm going to tell you, let me give you an example. So I was working with a developer. We were bringing on a marketing executive. I was the second interview, and typically being a recruiting company, we try not to ever do the two interviews. You know, they'll interview with my VP of recruiting, Darla. And I mean, most of the time we can skip me, right? But this mm-hmm. was a different situation. So we had to have two interviews. And when that happens, I'm happy to talk to you at night. I'm happy to talk to you on the weekend. Something that doesn't take away from your job. And that's just courtesy for them, because yeah. I'm taking more of their time. So I talked to the candidate, and at the end of it, I was honest. I said, you know, you're a little bit younger in experience than what I feel like I'm looking for, but things could change. This is a new position. So things could change. And so I want to give you a little bit of feedback in the event that we come back. And I told him, your answers are being drawn out. You're talking too much. So you need to work on tidying up your answers, because halfway through your answer, you're losing me, because I need you to get to the finish line faster. And that's with anything. That was in his current job. Probably nobody had ever told him that. And so he was like, okay. Well, things moved around, and I'll be darned if the scope didn't change a little bit. And Darla and I talked, and I said, okay, I want to go back to that guy. And so I said, but I want you to coach him again. He's got to tidy up his answers.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so he can present his best self.
Yes. And so he, you know, went through the interview process. I'll be darned, he was the top candidate. But the owner comes to me and he says, I'm a little concerned about the communication skills. And I said, I understand. I said, I've had a conversation with him. I think that he was diligent, and that's how he got, you know, to the end with mm-hmm. you. Because this is his third conversation with this developer owner. And I said, I think that when he gets excited, he's reverting back to the on and on. I go, but you know, he's still early in his career. And he said, well, do you think it's something I can fix? And I said, not overnight. I said, you got to continue to give feedback, give him some tools, you know, maybe give him some leadership coaching. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the kid got the job. I'm so freaking proud of him. And mm-hmm. he was a great choice. But we know the risk. We know that where our risks are with him, and we've communicated it. So I feel like that so many times, now that ended up a really good story, but there are times that I really try to end the conversation with somebody and saying, I'm not moving you forward, and this is why, because you're missing this, but you did great in the interview, and these are the things that you did really well. You're coming across as authentic, or it may be, you know, you left a job without having a job, and you're not telling me what happened. So by you not telling me what happened, I've made up all of this big story.
Yeah.
And so if my big outlandish story isn't true, and you can sum that up in two or three sentences, then it becomes a non-issue. So talk about it. Talk about it. You know, and if you were let go, talk about it. Hey, I had the worst day of my whole life, my whole career. I messed up. I should have done this better. I get it. I wasn't what they needed. You know, it's kind of going back to my JPI story. I wasn't what they needed any longer.
Well, that's the interesting thing about promotion. And I had this exact conversation yesterday around like never promote your best salesperson, never promote your best engineer. And it was around like they're good at what they do because they're good at what they do, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be successful managers. And often successful managers are not the best engineer, are not, you know, good engineers, good whatever, right? They're not, they're tuned differently. And I think that it's, and I don't have the answer for this. I can't even imagine the answer for this, but being able to provide a career path that rewards those that are incredible individual contributors. The challenge comes from like from a manager or leader perspective is that you can't get as much leverage out of them. And so if you can't leverage somebody, then they're ultimately capped by what you can pay them. And that's an economic reality. Or at least I believe it to be an economic reality. I'd love to hear your perspective.
You know, I believe that everybody should be paid for their skill set. And there are often times that I find that people are way underpaid for their skill set. And then I think some people are overpaid for their skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that recruiting you know, we do so much strategy in our business that I'm not sure that we're doing enough strategic things within recruiting. So a lot of people will say, okay, all of our regional managers need to be paid this much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not everybody is the same and not everybody brings the same skill set. So I don't necessarily think that that's accurate. I don't know that I'm answering that question, your question.
Well, I'm just curious because like like when I look at it from a leverage perspective, like if I'm seeking to, oh, that's good. Thank you, Anta. I'm seeking to understand like from a leverageability perspective, like just this conundrum, right? Of you've got an exceptional individual contributor and then you've got the leverage model of the corporation, right? Where if you have 100 people that roll into you, you've leveraged yourself 100 times, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some degree, right? The mathematics work themselves out. But if you're an individual contributor, there's only so many things you can do in that 40 hours. Like if you have 100 people rolling into you, you have 4,000 hours of effort rolling into your role that you're accountable for. If you're an individual contributor, you have 40 on a weekly basis, right? So it's like, how do you marry up? How do you true up the contributions of ICs versus people in leverageable positions? Because on one hand, you don't want to lose the people that are incredible ICs. And so how do you, and we're seeing this right now with the centralization movement, and I'll say a lot of it is there's a lot of people are positioning the argument that centralization will create career paths because of what I just described in terms of leverage, right? It'll create the regional maintenance manager. It'll create the regional leasing manager. And those roles will emerge to manage pods of people, which didn't necessarily exist before because it was a role that stuck inside the IC kind of like bucket, or the building bucket, the site level bucket. And like, have you seen a world where you can pay ICs? Like, is there even a theoretical model that you can pay an IC the same level as someone who would manage, you know, at that same level? I'm not articulating it well enough, but I hope you can.
Yeah, that's another area that I think that recruiting will sophisticate itself. That when you think about, let's go to leasing, and you think about your person that generates more leases than anybody else.
Yep.
Well, it doesn't mean that they're going to be good. You know, kind of are the way that it used to be is you would start in leasing, you would go to a leasing manager, an assistant manager, and then a property manager.
Yep.
Okay. Well, your leasing professional is not going to necessarily be a good property manager.
Mm-hmm.
So why, I mean, keep bumping up that leasing person's salary. I mean, keep them doing what they're doing well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I go back to people need to be paid for their skill set.
Yeah.
And we don't have to force people to move up in a certain way.
If they can find leverageability in their skill set, mm-hmm. Could that be the trade-off? Like if you're an incredible leasing, an IC at leasing level, and let's imagine that you discover some AI that can multiply yourself 4 or 5 times, then you should be paid as though you're managing, you know, you're producing that kind of output. So like if I heard you correctly, it kind of comes back to not where you sit inside the hierarchy, inside the triangle, but sits inside what kind of output you're creating.
Yes. I think people need to be paid for their skill set. And I don't necessarily.
Skill set or outputs?
Well, it's the same thing, really. I think their skill set is a product of their output.
Okay. I'll join you in that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I do also see people that are making good salaries, let's say 200 plus, and I look at their skill set and I'm like, there's not a match.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that person's got to be, in my mind, a pretty dynamic leader. Mm-hmm. I mean, got to be able to attract the top talent, and that's another thing. You say attract the top talent. Well, what does that look like? Well, for every position, it looks different.
Mm-hmm.
They're not all, if you have 10 regional managers, they should not all look the same. That's for darn sure. Because they have no scope.
Yeah, that one I totally agree with. Like in terms of the diversity conversation, I like to categorize it in terms of diversity of thought, and you can't have them all look the same. And I'm not talking about physical appearance. I hope everyone hears that out loud. I'm talking about like the way they approach the work, because you're not going to get any innovation if everyone does exactly the same thing. If everyone's hammering the nail the exact same way, that's all you're ever going to get.
And I think that's what our industry has done
before
is I do see some changes. You know, just because you're great at leasing doesn't mean you're going to be a great trainer of soft skills.
Sure. Sure. Well, that's a really good point for us to segue onto closing things out here. So when you look back at your background and even the conversation we had today, like what, you know, when you started 22 years ago and all the people you've chatted with today, you've chatted with throughout your career, like what's a bit of advice that you seek to serve as a North Star for yourself or for other people so that you remain true to yourself? Like what's a bit of advice you give yourself or even just to make it easier?
You know, I think that one of the things that I would, and I see this all across the board, is my biggest advice is to figure out who you are, who you want to be, and stay true to that. Don't become something that you don't want to be, or don't allow somebody to have you do, make choices or do actions that you don't want to do. So that self-identity, I think, is so important. People get wrapped up in their identity is their job.
Yep.
And I think in order to do your best work, you have to have a separate identity of who you are. And then you can pull that in and put it into your job. But if that job goes away, you still need to be grounded and know who you are.
I love it. And I think that, and you know, I had this conversation with somebody maybe a couple weeks ago. If you know who you are and you remain authentic, it's less work. Oh, I know. I was talking to Tony Souza at TAA. And
less work.
It's a lot of overhead to dress up the front.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of energy.
And it's exhausting. Going back to the change that I made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's the bookend of the conversation, right?
Uh-huh.
And I applaud the courage that you've made. I mean, I'm mindful, and I applaud the courage that you had 22 years ago to recognize who you were, because 22 years ago, that wasn't very common. And it wasn't popular. A lot of people were doing things that they just did, you know, mm-hmm. working for the weekend.
Yes. And now it doesn't matter what day of the week it is for me.
Every day. That's the best part of being an entrepreneur, is you can work.
Yeah,
every single
it is. So kind of going back to being true to who you are and having an identity that's outside of work. Because it's not all wrapped up. I mean, everybody has their own identity, and then they have work, and then they may be a partner to someone, they may be a parent to someone, or they may have community services that they enjoy. But don't let all of those things wrap up into work. They're all your identity. You're really the center of it. Yeah. And these are all just satellites. Yeah. And you have to stay, like I said, true to that. So about 8 years ago, I was living in Dallas, trying to be all, do all, fit in all, the rat race of what we're all doing. But the thing is that I could do what I was doing from home. And I just decided, this is not the life that I want. I can do all the things that I want to do from a business standpoint. And I'm lucky, I understand that. And so I'm like, hey, I want to move out of the city. I want to move on to Acreage. I want to... Yeah. You know, have animals. I want to be able to look at and hear the just nature, I guess.
Yep.
And so go back to that husband of mine that, you know, when I wanted to leave my corporate America job and start my own company, and he was like, do we have to sell the house? Well, this time I went to him, I'm like, I got to get out of here. We got to sell the house. And that man put me in the car at 7 a.m. on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, and drove me to all the homes listed in the country. Well, I'll be darned if we didn't end up in Oklahoma. I'm a diehard Texan. I mean, live and breathe. I can't even tell somebody I live in Oklahoma. My answer is when someone says, where do you live? I go, the Texas-Oklahoma border.
Yeah.
Okay. Because we moved right over it. I have 40 acres. I have 27 animals. And I work the same amount or more than I ever have. I've grown my company. just the freedom and permission and being able to be exactly who I am is
that's back to your advice, right? Know who you are.
Refreshing. Yeah. I mean, I've had record years. I still push myself outside of my comfort zone, and I'm doing so many other different things other than People Zest. That's what's so fun about it, is I'm doing other things that matter to me. So my identity is not People Zest. My identity is Jonna Smith.
We need to park that for another call, because there's tons to dig in on that. Yeah. People are excited to talk to you from this conversation. What's the best way to reach you?
I guess to pop into my inbox. I just love a pop in my inbox. So you can connect with me on LinkedIn. And then that can get you to my inbox. And I'm happy to talk. One of my favorite conversations are people that feel like they're stuck.
Yeah.
They can't see the future because of all the trees.
Yeah.
I love those conversations. And you don't even have to be looking for a job. It can just be career advice. That's what I get excited about.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Well, for everyone listening today, thank you so much, Jonna. I just was thrilled with this conversation today. Looking forward to it all week. If you're listening on the podcast or if you're catching the live later on, comments can be entered there and we'll both get notified for it. We can jump on and ask and answer any questions you have right there. Listen to the podcast on Apple or Spotify. Please hit like, subscribe. Those are always helpful for people to help find the podcast. And this is brought to you by IRCX, where AI remote maintenance software help you see it, solve it, close it, prevent all those blind trips and blind dispatch, save you the blind spend. You know, this has been a wonderful conversation today. I love the message to be true to yourself and be authentic. I think that can be helpful for a lot of people, especially right now.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And have a wonderful weekend. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
And we're done. This is awesome. I got someone knocking my door.